Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips. Today, I'd like to welcome to the program Matt Betts, a former radio on-air personality and newscaster, writer, poet, and huge pop culture junkie. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So, as I mentioned briefly off air, I see you've had a very diverse career.
I think that's a polite way of putting it. Yeah, I've kind of been all over the place, I guess. I mean, when I went to college, I thought, you know, this has been a while ago. You know, this has been 20-ish years ago, some years ago. And I thought it'd be, you know, fun to be on the radio. I thought that'd be a blast. And so I went into college my first week, and I said, oh, they've got a radio station here. So me and like two other friends, we went there and said, hey, you know, can we get some kind of training? We'd love to be on the air sometime. They go, yeah, you'll start Monday. And, you know, this was like a Thursday or something, you know.
Oh, wow.
And they, yeah, so they really didn't give us any training there. They just kind of threw us in there. So, you know, I did news for college station for a while. I also ended up, you know, doing, you know, being a DJ for a metal show for a little while. And so I really, you know, you kind of got thrown into it, and you learned a lot of things. You learned about production, and you learned how to handle yourself in an interview, how to interview others. And so it was all a pretty quick learning process. And so I was at school anyway for broadcasting, and I ended up doing a lot of radio and doing a little bit of news here and there. You know, it was whatever sort of was available. But it was kind of weird because I was, you know, I was there, and it was the big sort of alternative time. You know, it was when Seattle bands were big and grunge was just hitting, and I ended up working for oldies stations. So, you know, I was, you know, driving to work, listening to Nirvana, and I'd get there and I'd be playing Elvis and Roy Orbison. and so it was fine by me, but it was just a really weird time for me to be absorbing all this culture. And I think that's where I kind of, you know, part of the reason I, you know, consider myself a pop culture junkie is that I had this infusion of just sort of a little bit of everything. And I ended up working for another oldie station later on when I came back to my hometown in Lima. And I kind of had a varied track with that. I've done a lot with publishing. I've done a lot of writing. I publish poetry as well, speculative poetry. So I have horror poetry out there. I interned at a TV station for a while, and you know, I worked at a comedy club as a waiter, which was probably one of my favorite jobs ever. Not the waiter part of it, but to go into these comedy clubs at the time and just, you know, have people come in and do their acts for a week, and you could watch these people, these comedians, like develop a joke. You know, you either had the people that came in that were trying new stuff, to the people who had their act and did it and got out, you know. But over a week, you could see the good ones are the ones, you know, who really paid attention to the audience, you know, take that kernel of a joke and mess with it and see how people reacted and things like that. So
that had been fun.
It was, yeah. I mean, I met a lot of really good comedians at the time, and it was a pretty big deal for comedy at the time too. It was, you know, it was in the early '90s, and like every cable show had their own comedy special or comedy night or whatever, and so you got to see a lot of people coming in and doing stuff. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you're writing a book or when you're writing poetry or whatever, you know, taking that idea and trying different things with it. And I think I learned a lot from them, just by seeing how, you know, some of these really good comedians took an idea and ran with it, you know.
That's awesome.
I
just to be kind of a fly on the wall, just to kind of see how their process works, had to be part of the fun of developing your own stuff.
Yeah, it was. And you know, I think, you know, radio is a really great job, especially the, you know, when I was a DJ, you know, doing the nights or whatever, because you really were on your own. You got to, you know, really work on something, or you got to just go live and say whatever, and you had to have it, you know, it had to have some sort of rhythm to it. It had to have, you know, you couldn't be stuttering like I am now. You know, you had to be smooth and get in and get out. And a lot of the comedians were like that, you know, they you could tell by their demeanor whether they were, you know, comfortable being on stage or whether they were new or whether they were trying something new and weren't quite comfortable with the joke. So, yeah, it was it was an interesting way to learn things. And like I did that for like 2 years. And like I said, a lot of great people came in and out of there that I got to watch them, you know, with their acts. So, yeah, terrific job.
What were some of the biggest people you get to see come out of there?
Well, see, when I say my favorite big person, people go, oh, I don't know who he is. You know, it's kind of hard to say this. But I don't know if you know Larry Miller. He's an actor. He's been in tons of stuff. He was in Pretty Woman. He was in, you know, Stuff All the Way Back There. He was in 10 Things I Hate About You and stuff like that. And he also was a comedian, and he long before he was doing the acting. It was one of the last times I was at the club. I was, moving on. I got another job. And they let me come back and interview him for a class I was doing. And he just had all kinds of great advice. And he was just a terrific guy to sit down with. And, gave me, just as I was interviewing him, gave me advice, great advice about myself as I was going through. You know, I was this college student with somebody I really looked up to. And I said, I'm really sorry that I'm not really prepared. And he kind of said, you never have to tell someone you're sorry about, showing up and being you, I guess, it kind of put me at ease talking to somebody I was kind of flabbergasted around. He kind of, I don't remember exactly how he put it, but he said, you do the best you can be, more or less. And just a lot of other things he said stuck with me. He was, like I said, he was in movies, he was a comedian, and he went to school. I didn't know that until I interviewed him to be a musician. So he was like a concert pianist or something. And I said, wow, that's a lot of creative stuff going on. And he said, well, one thing kind of feeds into the other. If I write a piano piece or I practice this piano piece, it helps me be creative when it's time to write, or when it comes time to be on stage or in front of a camera. Just one thing, leads to another, and they all sort of help each other and feed each other and make each other better. So it was kind of neat that I felt pulled, obviously describing my careers, I guess. I've always felt kind of pulled in different directions, because I would love to do, I'd love to write short stories. I love to write poetry. I love to write this and that. And he just sort of said, it's okay to do it all, as long as you do the best you can at all of them. And eventually they're all going to, feel like one big creative whole, I guess.
That's really a great way of looking at it, just feeding the creativity.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a terrific interview. And I probably still got a copy of it somewhere that I forget what I got in the class. I don't know if I got I don't think I got an A on it, but it was still, I enjoyed doing it. So early on and really was something that, I don't know, it really kind of spoke to me, I guess.
Awesome. Yeah. So switching gears a little bit, what's a comic book or cartoon property that's been kind of, because we kind of focus on heavily on cartoons and comic books on this network, but that's been kind of instrumental in your writings or in your career as a whole?
Well, cartoons and comics, growing up, I mean, I miss having Saturday morning cartoons, even though I'm, I never had the chance to sit down with my kids and say, all right, it's Saturday morning, we're going to go watch, whatever that schedule used to be. Let's see, G.I. Joe's on at this time, Godzilla's on, and then the Super Friends. It just isn't the same now that it's all streaming. It's like you kind of took what you could get back then, and you liked it. And it just isn't the same now. But I wrote I talked about some poetry I do. It's speculative poetry. I wrote an entire book of poetry based on the Godzilla Saturday morning cartoon from the 70s and 80s. Eventually we got ready to publish it. And the publisher got a little worried about getting sued by Toho and by NBC. They're very litigious about Godzilla. Apparently Toho is. So I had to go back and sort of redo it. But to write that, originally the concept was that I was going to, that I did write, actually. I think it was five poems for each episode. One of them was like a haiku, and the rest all were just revolved around that particular episode from the first season. And the title of each poem was a line of dialogue from that cartoon. So, and this was, 5 or 6 years ago, but they had the whole first season of the Godzilla cartoon on Hulu at the time. So I sat there and watched all of these episodes over and over of Godzilla, these really sort of cheesy Godzilla cartoons, to the point where I'd be sitting there watching cartoons, and my oldest son would sit there and go, Dad, are you really watching this again? Are you? We've seen this episode. And I go, yeah, but it's research. I'm working on something, you know. So basically, I had 13 episodes, and I must have watched each of those episodes. I don't know how many times, you know, within a couple months span, writing this book. And I mean, when you're a little kid, you're probably 5 or 6 at the time. When he gets sick of cartoons, you know you're obsessed or you've got a problem, you know. But I remember that so fondly from my childhood. And then when I sat down to do this project, I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't as awesome as I remembered. You know, it was a very 80s cartoon or very 70s 80s cartoon. But I still was obsessed with it, and I still love it. So that's one of them. And you know, I mentioned G.I. Joe. I loved that cartoon too. You know, Super Friends was a very big deal for me because, you know, that led to a lot of other things, but it also led to other DC, you know, characters coming into their show to be like, oh, I know who that car, you know, I know who that guy is, and I know who that villain is, you know. So those three were pretty big for me. And, you know, Spider-Man, the cartoon they had for a while there, was pretty big too for me.
Yeah, but, I can definitely relate to things not living up to the glory of your childhood.
Right.
We've gone through on a couple of our podcasts reviewing either multiple episodes per podcast or an entire series in a podcast episode. And we're like, wow, this just doesn't hold up.
Right. Well, we were doing I was at Dragon Con for the first time this year, and we were having some panels. We started talking about cartoons that were made from like rated R properties, but made into children's cartoons. Like they had a Rambo cartoon for a while. You know, the kids weren't old enough to actually go see the movie, but they decided maybe a Rambo cartoon would be a good idea for them. They had, I think they may have made a... I can't think what the other one is, but we were just talking about all these properties that you were just thinking, why would anyone consider this a good idea for a kid, you know? But I remembered some of them. I remembered Rambo very briefly, but there were a couple others that were just, you know, they were not child friendly, but they made them into a kid's cartoon. So, yeah, cartoons were a pretty big deal. Like I said, I mean, I remember a lot of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, Laugh Olympics and things like that when I was a kid. And, you know, these days you don't really see them much. I mean, we were just talking the other day, some friends of mine, about Bugs Bunny. You know, they used to watch them, you know, Saturday mornings, but they also used to have them like in syndication. You could see them constantly. And kids today just don't see that. A lot of the ones that we used to see just aren't even available anymore, you know, because they were, you know, taken out of circulation for various reasons that, you know, I can't even show my kid a certain one that I loved when I was younger, you know. So, yeah, I mean, they were huge. And when I write some of my books and, you know, and especially the poetry, not just that one book, I do bring a lot of that back. I mean, one of my favorite poems that was nominated for an award of mine that was about Godzilla. And it was sort of, you know, not just remembering the cartoon, but remembering, you know, some of the movies that I loved when I was a kid, too, you know, back when before the time of cable. And I lived in Lima, Ohio, which is sort of midway between Toledo and Cincinnati. So when we watched TV, we could get, if we were lucky, our antenna would pick up sometimes from Detroit, as far as Detroit, but usually it was Toledo, it was Dayton, and maybe Columbus. And if I was very careful on the weekends, I could get a channel, I think it was for Detroit, that showed a monster movie every weekend or had two or three, you know, it's like their weekend creature feature or whatever. And I remember, you know, desperately trying to get the fuzz out so I could, you know, actually watch, you know, Rodan or whatever. So they were a big part and I worked for that, you know. So I was very satisfied to get to watch those movies after a while because, you know, I knew what time they were on and I had to get that antenna aligned just perfectly. And the wind was blowing, I could watch just about the whole movie. So those were pretty important.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what's a comic series or comic collection that you have that's the largest, whatever that may be, character-wise or ensemble?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I collect a lot of things that I have trouble, you know, picking up now because they, you know, I stopped for a while and then I thought, well, I want to try and finish this series. I mean, things like the original Marvel Godzilla series only had like 24 or 25 issues, but I'm still having trouble finding a few of them here and there, you know. I used to love Avengers. I have some pretty old ones that are in terrible condition, but they're still, you know, like some of the original giant size annuals of Avengers, like I think the number number five or something. It was pretty early on. I honestly don't remember the number right now, but I loved Avengers. I loved Daredevil. I was more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy. I've just about the whole early run of G.I. Joe up to a point. Micronauts was a huge one that I loved, and Star Wars was probably one of the first comics that I collected. I bought the movie tie-ins from, you know, the original Star Wars, and then I just kept collecting, and it made sense to keep collecting because it was, you know, Star Wars was a huge deal for me when I was a kid, and to be able to read these continuing adventures, which probably aren't canon anymore, was great. I mean, they had some really super weird stuff that I just wouldn't see anywhere else. You know, just different aliens and different, you know, concepts they tried to run with, that, you know, I really enjoyed reading that for quite a while. And then after, you know, I forget how many, 100 or so, a little more than that, I kind of got bored with it because they were, excuse me, turning in on themselves and doing the same ideas over and over. So, but I love the Star Wars Marvel comics, and I've read some of the other series before. I mean, some of the other ones like Dark Horse and things, and I like those too, but those Marvels were so immediately after the movie. And it was funny because they would have these runs, and then they would hit a movie and they'd have to figure out how to work around that movie or how to, you know, retrofit what they'd written in with the movie. And, you know, like, I think they originally had Jabba the Hutt was this skinny sort of fish guy in the comic books. And then when they suddenly showed up on screen as this giant slug, they had to hastily change the guy. But it was kind of one of those things where everything sort of connected together in my childhood. Loved the movie, so went straight for the comic book, and they did a great job for quite a while. So if we're looking at some of my bigger things, probably the Star Wars. I read Iron Man for quite a while. It's kind of in and out of a lot of the Marvels for a while. It depended on who was drawing, who was writing, and what the storyline was, you know. I read Iron Man for a long time. X-Men, I picked up about the Brood series. I think I saw that cover and was excited about that. So that's where I started reading that and stayed with them for quite a while. So like all over the place, you know, there wasn't one thing that really struck my fancy. It was just good storytelling. And if it was a good story that I, you know, really enjoyed, I stayed with it.
Nice. Yeah, that's kind of how it was for a lot of my comic collecting too. Nowadays, it's just mostly because I like the cover art more so than anything else.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the same way. I mean, if it's a great cover, I'm more likely to pick it up and read it, even if the story was so-so. You know. I can think of a few. The X-Men, and then there were a couple of Daredevils, and I think I got started with Daredevil, and it was mainly because the covers were terrific. And that brought me in, and then after that they had that good story, so I hung around for it. So
what are some projects that you have upcoming that you can kind of tell the listeners about?
Well, my first book was this sort of steampunk action adventure thing with a little horror and a little of this and a little of that, and it was called Odd Men Out, and that came out in 2013. And my publisher liked enough that I got three more books with them. But one of the books had to be a sequel, and I've done all the other books, so I'm writing the sequel for that one. So it's actually done. It's with the editor right now, and we're going back and forth on edits and changes and things. So probably, hopefully later on this year, I'm betting usually it'll come out. Usually they come out about July or August, excuse me. But it's hard to say. I haven't seen their schedule for the year. I'm very excited about that one. It took a while to figure out where I wanted to go from the original story of Odd Men Out. And I kind of took a tangent and ran with it for that. And it's kind of a combination of this steampunk adventure, but I've added in this sort of Mission Impossible vibe to it because there's a Confederate spy. It takes place during the Civil War. There's a Confederate spy who's sort of front and center for the sequel who wasn't at all in the first book. So I had a lot of fun writing that. I got to do research. I'm putting air quotes around that by watching all the spy movies I could get my hands on. So I went back and watched Mission Impossible. I watched a bunch of James Bonds, and, you know, I just, a few other ones that just came out not too long ago. I were part of my research for that. Because I like to take the tropes that are in there and the things that everybody expects from a spy movie or a spy novel and kind of turn a little bit, you know, try and take it in a different direction. So, you know, I had to watch all those movies or I just wouldn't be doing my job. So that one will be out later. I've got another book from an Australian publisher called, or the publisher's called Severed Press. And I've got a book coming out with them that's basically, I don't want to say it's not monsters on a train like snakes on a train, on a plane, but it's something like that. There's some genetically modified Bigfoot creatures that vex some people who are trying to get out of a snowstorm, and it doesn't quite go so well for them. So I'm in the middle of writing that one. Odds are that'll be sometime later this year it'll come out. But a lot of fun. I mean, that's what I like about writing. You know, you can take all these things that you loved reading about or watching on TV and find a way to put your own spin on it and take off. I mean, I was a big fan of, you know, like cryptozoology, only they didn't call it that when I was a kid. You know, it was basically Bigfoot books and Loch Ness Monster and ghosts and stuff. So to be able to take all that stuff and just have fun with it now is just a blast.
Yeah, I can totally relate to having fun with writing. For a college course, I had to write a TV show pilot screenplay.
Oh, wow.
Because I took like a overarching media class, and they would have us write little short bits in these stories. But what I was using for my character basis for it was I took this edx.org course on basically the function and like designing your own superhero universe. And so I took those characters that I made in that and had to make kind of a light premise. And then I took the class again the next year. And so when I went into my college course, I mixed the two. And so one was taking place in the future, one was in the past. And then I kind of connected it with like a weird time travel aspect and created all my own. And the teacher and everybody in the class is like, that sounds really complicated. I'm like, it doesn't. Like,
right.
It made perfect sense, but I really like anything with time travel. So it's a lot of fun to sit there and play with the tropes there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when people ask me to describe some of my books, I always find it hard to do because I crush a lot of things up into the book. You know, it's like, you know, it's a zombie, steampunk, adventure, horror, sci-fi novel. But don't worry, it all comes together well, I promise. You know, it all works out. I just can't explain it, you know? So, no, I know exactly, you know, what you mean. We had we were supposed to do a newscast in college and, you know, we produce our own newscast, write the script and all this stuff. And instead of doing a regular newscast, I did like a weekend update or, you know, something like that. Something that was more fun and with more, you know, just strange little cues here and there. And I had a lot more fun with it than I think other people did. You know, they were doing it very straight. And I decided to introduce a bunch of other, they may have enjoyed doing it, but I enjoyed writing it and putting it all together even back then. So yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. That's very cool.
So definitely looking forward to hearing more when those come out. So how can the listeners get a hold of you and find out more about or interact with you online?
Sure. My website is mattbetts.com, just mattbetts.com. My Twitter handle, someone had already stolen Matt Betts, at Matt Betts, so it's at Betts underscore Matt, if you want to find me on Twitter. And I'm also on Facebook at facebook.com/MattBettsWrites. You can find me there. I'm trying to scale back my social media, but I can't always do that. You know, when I get bored, I just can't help but dive back in and tweet stuff and retweet stuff. It's a sickness, really.
Yes, yes. They make it like that by design.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, they know that we're going to do that. It's very cool. Yeah, yeah. I have all kinds of fun. And, you know, I'm always, you know, out there at cons and stuff too. I love attending, you know, sci-fi cons. And like I said, I went to Dragon Con. So I'll just randomly run into people that I've met at other cons. I live in Columbus, Ohio now, and I went to Dragon Con down in Atlanta. And I was walking up the stairs and literally ran into a guy that lives not too far from me. And had no idea he was going. He had no idea I was going. We just, out of all those thousands of people, somehow we just bumped into each other on the stairs. So
nice.
In fact, we hadn't met in Columbus. We met at another con in Chicago. So it's just this whole circle of wandering around and finding people and finding like-minded people. You know, the cons have just been, you know, so supportive of my books and you know, I do panels sometimes than I do, you know, workshops. And, you know, people are just, you know, terrifically supportive of other authors, and they'll come if their writer's trying to learn something. They're always happy to compliment you if you've taught them something. So I love going out to cons.
Cons mm-hmm. are definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to StokerCon in a few. I don't know if we want to plug this, since I don't know how long we'll be, how far out we'll be. But StokerCon is the horror writers conference, and that's always a blast. It's in Grand Rapids, Michigan this year. The last time I went was in California on the Queen Mary, so that was a blast.
Nice. Yeah, that's like an hour and a half for me. So I'm right? in Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Up in Grand Rapids. I'm going to drive from here. It should be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, again, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hang out with me on Altered Geek here. And
thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.